This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Perryman from Permira, Texas. And you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. Episode 1681, brought to you by Marker Sellers and the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, horse world.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Greetings, Alice. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's been quite the month. I'm ready to slow down a little bit, I think.
You're all situated in Permelia?
Permila. It was named after a girl named Permela. It's P-U-R-M-E-L-A. And for people who like geography, it's about 20 miles west of Gatesville on Highway 84. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Does it have a traffic light?
It has a blinking light.
Hey!
And a place called Shorty's Burgers and Pizza. It's open 6 days a week and probably serves, I don't know. We just keep hoping that they stay in business because they deliver, which is better than I had in Bluffdale.
Wow, the pizza delivery, that's a real luxury. We don't have pizza delivery in Ocala.
What, really?
Not where we're at. We don't have pizza. We have neither pizza delivery nor cell reception here.
Oh, well, we have some cell reception and we do have pizza delivery. But we usually go get it because it's like 5 miles from the house.
So. And you need to get out of the house. But on the flip side, here in Ocala, we have no less than 6 different tack shops within a 20-minute drive. So we're cool.
Oh, you know, I was in Austin the other day looking. I was going somewhere else and we pulled up to turn around and in front of me stood a Dover. And I was like,
tack shop!
Wait, no. We were looking for this place called Pinballs, which is where my my sister-in-law's daughter works. We got to play free pinball, which was really cool. She hooked us up with a ton of tokens. But we pulled into the parking lot looking for pinballs, and I look up, and it says Dover Saddlery. I was like, it's just like, you need to go in? And I'm like, it's really best if we don't.
Yeah.
But now I know where it is.
It's really best if we don't. Glenn has gotten really good now when we go on vacation and we're tooling around town, because when we go on vacation and we have a car to drive, we invariably just drive around randomly and see what's around. And he's gotten pretty good now that if we come to a tack shop or feed store of any sort, he just sighs and resigns himself and pulls in. He's like, don't even ask. I'm pulling in. Here I go. And he usually comes in with me for about 3 minutes, and then he gets bored and he goes back out and sits in his car and reads Facebook.
Unless you can find him a driving tack shop, in which case he probably would be less bored.
Well, if we came across a carriage shop, particularly if they have vehicles, yeah, that'll be a big distraction, and I have to take his wallet first. Yeah.
I keep thinking I'd like to have a horse to teach to drive. That's something I've always wanted to do. And we have Mike has a yearling, and she... Another year or two, I mean, neither one of us has ever broken anything to harness, but I have a book that's all about breaking horses to harness. And supposedly, if you go through all the steps, your horse will come out well. So
they make it sound easy in the book, don't they?
Yeah, so Stormy may have a chance to do all that. I mean, we already do a lot with her, and we're starting to teach her to pony. And I'm curious what she's going to turn into because her mom is probably part halflinger, and her mother was a quarter horse, her father is part spotted saddle horse and halflinger cross.
Wow.
Spotted rat. I'm sorry. Spotted. Well, because he didn't know. He said, the dad looks like Annette Griffin's horse, Tally, only it was red and white. So it's a pony mother and a draft father.
Wow, that's cray cray. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it's going to turn out to look like.
Well, there you go. That's your next big adventure, yeah. Alice. You're going to teach her to drive.
I hope so. But, you know, I figure it's probably another year in the making. We've already thrown blankets on her, and I set a saddle on her, and we do all this. We don't, you know, we trim her feet. We don't even put a halter on her for most of that. She's pretty easy.
So. Oh, boy, I can't wait to see it. Y'all go out there and get yourself a tractor tire to hitch her to, and off you'll go.
Exactly. Oh, we got tons of those.
There you go.
Tractor tire.
Yeah. I had to borrow an old tire from somebody when I was working with Scooter when we first got him, because we didn't have an old tire.
We have old tires, old vehicles, old fencing, old pallets.
And for those who have no idea what we're talking about, when you first break a horse to harness, you hitch them to a drag, which is something heavy with no wheels on it, because if they get moving a little quick, it won't chase them. It stops as soon as they do, and the act of they learn to lean into something and pull it. So that's really what you hitch them to first. And most folks nowadays use a tire of some sort, and that's the easy way to do it. And that's why I needed a tire, and I had to, and Scooter was tiny and malnourished. So all I had to use was a pickup truck tire, and that was enough.
I'll bet it was.
When I first started working with him, he had to pull it. The first time we took him out, he had to pull the tire, four sections of fence, which are eight feet each. And we eventually, after a month, graduated to going the whole way down the fence line, which was 120 feet. And the poor little fellow was exhausted. He's like, I'm done.
So I practice dragging things for our trail obstacles for when we do our trail challenges.
Yeah.
In NATRC, we don't do drags anymore. We used to, but they had some unfortunate accidents and the rule was changed so that we didn't do drags anymore. But
oh, that's
it's
a
like
shame.
Texas Trail Challenge. But I think there were just some accidents that happened and some people, you know, got bucked off. And,
see,
yeah, because people don't always listen when you tell them, if you have a problem, drop the rope.
Yeah.
And people just, they want to do it. They want to complete so badly, but they don't always drop the rope.
Like, the problem I have with that, though, is the whole point behind NATRC is to take practical, useful, and often essential skills and put them into a competitive setting. And in my book, if you're a trail horse, if you can't safely at least have your rider get off and drag a branch out of the way, hello?
Well, I think that's fine. I think it's just mounted drags.
Maybe they should institute a dismounted drag. You have to dismount and move a limb out of your way. Because at least then the worst the horse is going to do is you know, jump away from the rider and you have to go catch your horse and get 0 points or whatever you get. You're not at least going to get bucked off, but... that's a shame that they had to do that, but I get why, as an organization, that they would do that, because people make poor decisions. Yeah, people make poor decisions on their behalf. Yeah.
But no, I love doing trail stuff with Liberty. I never really taught him to drag. He just didn't, you know, someone does it in the call. I mean, I did, I guess, but I never like said, okay, today we're going to learn to drag. We just started dragging stuff.
Mm-hmm.
and he didn't mind. And so like, when we're out on trail, it's like my daughter and I always like to find big branches that we have to drag with our respective horse. Not the horse she's riding now, but the horse she used to ride. And we just, because it'd be like, look, here's a big one. I can pull it farther than you can pull it. And just one up each other.
That's funny.
Just to be silly. So.
Yeah, that's not something.
But yeah, the back.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's not something I've tried with Nigel yet. I've not tried to drag things. Now, when I'm out in the arena doing stuff, I can pick up jump rails and drag them around and when I'm dismounted. And I've done that with the tarp. We have a giant tarp that we use in the arena sometimes, and I can lead him around and drag that all over the place, and he doesn't care. So obviously he's been introduced to the tarp. How did we ever break horses before there were tarps and plastic bags? But I haven't tried to mount it yet. So now I'm inspired to hop on his back and see what I can do.
Make sure Glenn's out there to pick it up and hand it to you if you have to drop it. Because that's the biggest drag of practicing dragging is when you have to stop and drop it and then dismount and go. And it's okay if your horse is little, but like if I was practicing this with Joe Bob, he's he's like 15'3". And then I have to get off and get my thing and then go back to the place and go get on again. Tie it to the fence where I could reach it so I can drag it again.
I got really good when I had Beaker, who was 14'2" on a good day. I did all kinds of silly, crazy, obstacle-y kind of things with him in the arena because that's something that he just excelled at. So I did it because it made me feel successful. I got really good at using either the handle end of my dressage whip or a pole or a flag handle to pick stuff up off the ground because I could just lean over until...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could just lean the whole way over on him. He didn't care. So I got really good at picking stuff up with him without having to dismount.
My daughter did that with her old mare Dixie. Only she did one better than that. If it was on the left side, she'd position Dixie. And Dixie was 14 hands. She'd just lean over from the saddle and pick it up off the ground.
Just pick it up off the ground. Yeah.
Except there was one day that the saddle wasn't quite tight enough.
Uh-oh.
And she, it just slid a little. It didn't like slide all the way off, but she got too far over balance where she just couldn't pull herself back up. And she just sort of slowly melted to the ground. And of course, she had an audience because she was showing off. All of us stood around just laughed at her. And the horse like looked at her like, good job, Mom.
Really?
Good job.
You just did that, Mom?
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Well, besides watching your kids slide off the side of a horse and thinking about teaching your youngster to drive, what have you been up to since last we spoke the third Thursday of last month?
Well, we had our competition that we did the show from the competition that Thursday morning, and it went really well. We had on Saturday a bunch of people from Team Gatesville, Special Olympics team, parents and athletes come and help us at the ride, and the people at the ride were shared their horses and let them pet horses, and some of the folks even did some of the PNR stops, not like the official PNRs, but the PNR workers and the riders let them listen to the horse's heartbeats. And we have one, it was really cool. We have one athlete who's blind and developmentally disabled, and he had never heard a horse's heartbeat before. And that was just evidently, it was like, it just made his year that he just thought that was so cool. And a lot of the folks who were kind of nervous, or like one girl I know that really likes horses, her name is Bailey. She wants to try to do one of these rides eventually. She used to have a horse, but he was older and he passed away. And so we're trying to get her back into it. And she, overcame her shyness to get up and listen to the horse's heartbeat. And that was pretty cool that, that so many of the riders took time out of their ride to communicate with the Special Olympics athletes and let them pet their horses and pose for photos. I mean, even folks who are often very intense about their competition were very, everybody was just so wonderful. And we raised when it pushed him to shove, we raised about $150-$200 toward buying equipment for our Team Gatesville Equestria program, so we can buy some helmets. And like Troxel offers helmets for $25 a piece to the Special Olympics, so we'll be able to buy.
Oh, that's helmets great!
For the group. So we're hoping to have at least eight. Well, see, the horses can do two people. So if I have three horses, I can have six people. So we're hoping to have like four horses and eight individuals compete in the equestrian events next year.
Yeah.
Probably more if we end up with more horses and equipment. But I know I have four horses that can do it right now. So
awesome. Good for you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And then we went to Pole Canyon, which is out in West Texas. It is an amazing ranch in Kittaquay, Texas. Just spelled Q-U-I-T-A-Q-U-E.
Wow, that's a lot of letters.
And it's like there's a sign that says, don't know how to pronounce it, you call it Kittaquay. It's Kittaquay. And it's the town where Caprock Canyon State Park is. So there's more riding close by, but Pole Canyon has a guest house and hookups. And I want to say they told us it was 5,000 acres. It's land that's been in the Bearfield family for several generations. Lynette Fairfield has been in her family for many years. And we have competitions out there every year or every other year or so. And it's just beautiful. It's very challenging, but not scary challenging. It's not like, like Tevis where you look off one side and there's a cliff. It's not like that kind of challenging. but it's hard enough to make it fun, but I had told my husband that it was one of the most beautiful places he would ever see, and he was skeptical, but was really leaving. He was like, I would have to admit this is one of the best places I've ever gone.
Oh, cool. So Pole Canyon, and that's
Pole Canyon
in
Ranch.
And that's in Texas?
Yeah.
All right, so write that down.
Between
everybody.
Amarillo and Lubbock. And they were on an episode of Best of America by Horseback a few years ago, like 2011 or 2012, somewhere in there. But they repeated it. They repeated every so often.
Yeah, and everybody always sees a jump every time that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Reservations went up this week. They must have rerun it. Yeah.
But if they, you know, if they Google, if they look up Pole Canyon Ranch on Facebook, or, you know, if they go to the NATRC number 4 Facebook page, there's a ton of photos, because we didn't have an official photographer, but Annette Griffin took a bunch of photos, and Johnny always takes a lot of photos. So yeah. Not all of them attractive or good.
Well, that's part of the fun.
Oh, absolutely. No. I just mean that Annette was nice. She didn't post any of our really bad pictures. Joe Bob was really bad. So we have lots of really bad pictures.
Oh, Joe Bob. Now tell everybody who Joe Bob is.
Joe Bob is my 13, he's now 13, Tennessee, 13-year-old Tennessee Walker. And he was trail ridden before I got him in December. But this whole sport is new. I mean, the whole NATRC, the NATRC sport is new to him. He does really well when no one's watching. And I know people are like, oh, it's because you got nervous. And I'm like, no, I'm not especially nervous. It's just like mounting, for example. I had mounted him no less than 5 times before the judge mounts that morning. And he wouldn't come up to the mounting block and stand for me to get on. He held up the line while he finally quit moving. every time the judge wanted to put a finger in his mouth to check his capillary, or, you know, his gum color, his capillary refill time, he wanted to scratch his face on her body. And that's not good. That costs you points. Not
poor
a good
fella's itchy.
Too bad. So I had to dismount. He's still, I think it could be partly because he did some field trial work before I got him. And so when you get on and you start going, everyone went fast all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it took most of the 2 days for him to just walk and relax and realize he didn't have to be the fastest one out there.
Yeah. The first couple times I took Nigel out in larger groups, had that amped up problem. You know, we would be out for 3 hours, and after 2 hours and 45 minutes, he would walk. I get it.
Yeah.
I feel your pain, girlfriend. I feel your pain. Well, before we get too far along here, because we have two fantastic guests coming up and I don't want to miss this, you have a really, really fun list this month.
I do. I've been doing a whole lot of reading the last couple of months. The short background on it is that my husband doesn't sleep well, and I kept telling him, you know, we need to turn off the TV, we need to do more reading. And he was like, yeah, whatever. And then he went to a sleep doctor who told him to turn off the TV and do more reading. And so now I have like this quiet space at night where I can read again, where I used to just like, was like TV until bedtime.
Yeah.
So I've been like and then I moved. So I've been going through all my old books. And so I rediscovered a bunch of my favorite horse books. And most of these are, you know, books I read as a kid or a teenager, but it doesn't mean I don't love them any less. So, this list is courtesy of thehorsechannel.com, but, I don't think they're in any particular order, but the first one that caught my eye was the one called Summer Pony. And there's actually Summer Pony and Winter Pony. There's two books by Jean Slaughter Dottie.
That's an unfortunate name, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's Dotty. I don't know if I say her name right or not. This was a Scholastic Reader book I got probably in the 3rd grade. And we still have my original Summer Pony.
Oh, wow. You still have it.
Copies. I still have it. Yeah. And it's about this girl named Jenny who gets to rent a pony for the summer from the Sweetbriar Pony Farm. And the pony is not pretty, in her opinion. She wanted this sweet pony, but she wanted this pretty pony, but he was a bad tempered stud colt. And so talked her into this kind of, you know, in her opinion, ugly pony. But of course, Moki, as they come to call her, shows her true colors and what an awesome pony she is. And, you know, and then Winter Pony is the further adventures of Ginny and Moki. So,
I didn't recognize the cover on this one, but I found it on Amazon and I read an excerpt from it. I totally read this as a little kid. I went, oh my gosh, I remember this story.
And I remember what house I lived in when I bought it. Cause like I picture her neighborhood as being my old neighborhood, only more spread out. In the story, they keep the horse in the garage for a while. And I keep thinking, did I have done that in that house? Yeah, probably not.
So what other ones on this list have you either read or currently have in your library?
Well, I have Horse Heaven in my library,
but really?
I've never read it.
But you never read it.
I will, but it's really big. I need to listen to it when I'm driving because it's a really thick book. The Horse Masters, I have that one in my list. And my great aunt Vina gave me a copy, and I still have it from when I was about the same age, maybe fifth grade. And the cover has fallen off. It's got masking tape, like holding it together, and the pages are all yellow. But it's about a group of young riders at the British Horse Society. And, you know, and they bond. It's kind of like being on Survivor, only with horses.
That's cool. Now, this one I'm not familiar with. This is interesting.
Oh, it was really good. I just remember it was about like these group of young people, like living in dorms and working to become a certified riding instructors.
Oh, neat.
But it was good. They were probably, I was probably just old enough to appreciate the boy-girl relationship.
So it's got the teenage angst angle in it. Yes.
Probably. I don't remember, but, you know, probably.
There we go.
Which one for you?
Let's see here. On here I have... I read Summer Pony, but I don't still have one. I think that one disappeared. Happy Horsemanship, which is I would say it's in the same family as Thelwell books, but that's the first official horse how to book I ever had of my very own that we purchased.
Okay.
I had a giant library of horse books as a tiny child because one of my nearby neighbors was a retired professional show jumper. And he sort of one day he discovered that I was horse crazy, and he kind of took all the books and put them in a giant box and said, here, you can have these, little kid. And I couldn't even read them. I was that young. I thought the book about dressage was dressage. And I'd look at the pictures and go, well, they're not wearing any fancy clothes. So Happy Horsemanship was the very first one. And I highly recommend it even today for young readers who are horse crazy. In my opinion, it's an excellent book.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing, you talk about Happy Horsemanship, and it's not on the list, the one that I read, but the C.W. Anderson book, The Basic Horsemanship. And there's one here called Heels Up or Heads Up, Heels Down. And my book was a green covered book. But I remember reading about how to post.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Like, pretending I could practice posting. Oh, wow. And then, like, one day I got to ride an English horse as a 14 or 15-year-old. And I don't know if I did it well, but I understood what to do when the horse trotted because I'd read that book.
Oh, wow. That's cool. So, how about any other ones on here that you have?
Oh, there's so many. But, like, I'm looking at the Saddle Club series. I never read those books. But we liked the TV show, the first one, not the second one. There was a first one that was on. It was a Canadian TV production, and it was on it was on Nickelodeon or one of the kids' networks. But I'm seeing that it was written by Bonnie Bryant, and I'm wondering if that's the same person who wrote that. Well, it probably was. I read a book called A Horse Called Bonnie. That's what made me think of it. And it was a series of, again, it was like six books about a young teenager who found a horse that looked, you know, had been kind of wasting away, and they turned her into a fantastic racehorse.
Huh.
Which I'm thinking to myself now, it's like, well, how'd you get her jockey club papers? And how did you tell out the Black Stallion? Like, how'd you do this? And, you know, how'd you do that?
Suspension of disbelief, that's called, dear.
I know.
One of the other ones I have on here, of course, I had either borrowed from the library, excuse me, or purchased every Dick Francis novel.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Absolutely.
Every one of those.
Yeah. I found out about Dick Francis because of PBS, Odds Against, I don't know if it was Odds Against or if it was the, because there's two or three books with, with Sid Halley as the investigator. And the very first PBS mystery was a Dick Francis story. And I hit up in my room and watched it because it said for parental discretion, advised, and I wasn't supposed to watch those shows.
Oh, shame on
PBS,
you.
So I rationalized it out. Yeah, I don't remember. But I remember, you know, Sid Halley before I ever found, and then, you know, later I found the book with Sid Halley and I started reading all those books. But I've read Ruffian and of course all the My Friend Flicka books.
Of course.
And anyway, Seabiscuit and all the Marguerite Henry books.
Were you a Black Stallion or Misty of Chincoteague?
Both.
But which one was better?
I probably like the Black Stallion better.
See, I was always a Marguerite Henry gal.
But I liked Marguerite Henry. One of the girls in my fifth grade class wrote her a letter, and she wrote back.
Oh, how cool!
Yeah, so we were all these horse crazy kids.
I've been trying for years to try to get somebody. There's something called the Misty of Chincoteague Society. Who is, to the best of my knowledge, own all the copyrights to all of her material.
Okay.
And I've been trying for years to get someone from the Misty of Chincoteague Society to come on and just talk about her legacy in the books. As near as I can tell, they have a museum and all kinds of cool stuff. And I've never been able to get anything. So if anybody out there has contacts, send your email to Jennifer at Horse Radio Network.
Great.
And so that would be so cool. And King of the Wind, which is one of Marguerite Henry's books, was one of my absolute favorites of all time.
I agree. I love that book. And there's some that aren't even on here. There was a book I had called Horse Called Mystery. It's not on here. But I read it in third grade when I was home with pneumonia. And it was just such a good book. I've read it so many times and I still have my original copy. It's about a little boy named Owly who has a club foot. And he wears glasses and kids make fun of him and he's kind of scrawny and he makes friends with a crippled horse and together they get strong and become, you know, he becomes a horse hero.
And the neat part is every one of these, because so many horse books go out of print, you can find them all on Amazon in the used book department now. A Horse Called Mystery by Marjorie Reynolds, published in 1964. Yeah. You can get the paperback for $1.95. This is a bad thing. Book. I finally got my library whittled down to one shelf. We live in a tiny house. One shelf of horse books. And this conversation is going to cause a problem because I'm going to be back to four shelves very soon.
Kindle. That's why you have a Kindle. I live in a tiny house too. And that's why I have several thousand books.
I noticed a couple of these are available on Audible. And King of the Wind is one of them. Mm-hmm. So for the cruise, I'm getting King of the Wind on Audible.
There you go.
Dang, I'm happy. Well, why don't we wrap this up? And for folks who want to tell us about their horse book library, stop on over to our Facebook page and post them there. We'd love to hear about them, and you can recommend your favorites. I think it's time for us to chat with our first guest, Becky Rogers from Marker Sellers.
Good morning, Becky. I'm glad you could join us today.
Thank you, Alice. Good morning back to you.
So first off, I want to ask you about your new horse. I understand his name is Vino, which goes with Marker Sellers. Did you pick that name or did he come with that name?
He actually came with a name and it's a wonderful story. The person who trained him's name is Jessica Dapkowski. She's from LaPorte, Colorado. And I was watching the trainers on Facebook of the Mustang makeover. So I knew I wanted another Mustang because I have my wonderful Mustang, Fetal Heart. So I knew I wanted another Mustang. So I went to the Mustang makeover because where else would you find such a wonderful horses to choose from? So I went, I looked on Facebook and I was watching Jessica Dapkowski, a wonderful trainer that I had watched her in the past. And she trained, this was probably her 14th horse, and the horse that she was training was named Goober. And so I was watching her on site, and then all of a sudden Goober disappeared. So I show up to the Mustang makeover and I go to see her and I was like, what happened to Goober? She said, well, he ended up being a bucker. And she said, it was my 14th horse to train, and I tried everything I could, and I couldn't get the buck out of him. So I took him back to the BLM, and I got this other horse. And he was so cute, but I wanted to name him something that took the buck out. So I was going to name him. She said I was going to name him No Buck Chuck. And I don't know if you're familiar with Two Buck Chuck, but yeah. Two Buck Chuck is a very inexpensive line that they had at Joe's. It's $1.99. And it's pretty much unfermented, well, recently fermented wine from California. They take mostly the grapes that aren't being used in the bigger wineries, and they put them on the shelf. So they're very young wine, $1.99. It's called Two Buck Chuck. So anyway, she was going to call him No Buck Chuck, but she thought he was so cute that she didn't want to call him Chuck. So she named him Vino. And so when I saw him and his name Vino, I just fell in love with him. Just instant love. And I was there for every class at the Mustang Makeover. They have 5 or 6 classes. They have a trail class. They have a transition class. They have a manners class. And so I watched him the whole time. And then I had a couple other horses on back burner too. But when it came down to it, I just felt like I was the luckiest person in the world because I got my little Vino. And the trainer was thrilled because Vino was going to a winery.
Well, that makes sense.
And that's where Vino came from. And he's turned out to be such a joy, such a joy.
So have you introduced her to your wine since, you know, you have her horse?
Oh, of course. Yes. Yes. Every time I see her, which has been 3 times since, she comes to events at the Fort Worth Stock Yards all the time, and I always take her our newest wine so she can try it out. But yeah, we don't have Vino on the label yet, but that'll be next after Liberty, of course.
We have to put Liberty on the label. So speaking of the wine labels, we have pictures to put up on Horses in the Morning Facebook page, but I want to hear a little bit about how the different wine labels with the horses came to be and a little bit about those specific wines.
Okay, sure. Well, it all started when we opened the winery, and I had said to my husband, that's fine. I'll help you however I can, but we have to have horses on the label. And at the time, I think I shared last time we talked, we had a wine called Copperhead Red because we had so many Copperhead snakes in the winery that we named our wine Copperhead Red. Well, when we became commercial, Copperhead Red was kind of a scary thing for people to think about buying. No one really wanted a snake with a label with a snake on it. And so we looked at different horse labels, and then we decided to do the kinder, gentler blue stem grass, which is native in the grasslands. And so we did that, and I went along with it. But then, in the back of my mind, I always wanted horses on the label. So I had the opportunity a couple months ago, and the process of making a wine label takes about a month. And we were on a deadline, and so I wanted a horse running. So I was trying to make poor little Vino run in the pasture, and he was so confused because the horses at one end, and I put him at the other end and have him run to the other side, and he just had this frightful look on his face. However, a friend of mine had posted some pictures on Facebook of her horses, and so I just kindly asked her if I could use one of them, and one of the ones we used is Run for the Rosé, and our rosé wine is a Syrah grape, and it's just been in the tank, not ever in the barrel. So it has a light, beautiful, effervescent pink color. And it's my new favorite right now, by the way. But it's called Run for the Rosé, a playoff of Run for the Roses. And Hank is the horse. It's Marquis Mischief is his paper name. But he's Hank, and he's been under Tevis twice. And he's got, I think, about 10,000 miles on him, competition miles.
Wow.
So anyway, He belongs to a friend of ours named Johnny Jewell, who rides competitive trail with us. And
he was a President's Cup winner.
And a President's Cup winner. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Yeah, 2013. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I thought he would be apropos to have such a seasoned horse on the pasture, and he's running in blue stem grass. So that was just perfect for that label. And then another horse label is my horse Thief of Hearts, and that's our Muscanelli, and that's the grape, straight Muscanelli grape. And it's looking through his ears at the vineyard. And our vineyard is 1 acre of Syrah, and I often exercise the horses doing serpentines between the rows. And so this is, we've probably done that 10 times. And so he's looking at it like, okay, enough. So I took the shot of him looking at the vineyard, and that's our Muscanelli for that. And that's Thief of Hearts. And the next one, I went all out here. The next one is our Muscat Gialla, which is Allison's favorite, right?
My favorite. Yeah, well, the Reds for the Rosé is a close second. But, I love the Muscat Gialla.
Yeah, and these wines, probably 3 months now we've had them out. And it's funny, my husband, Mark, he's become a pretty good real winemaker. And I'm the wine taster, but he's actually the winemaker. And he tried a different system for these two, and I think it worked really well, the Gialla and the Rosé. He didn't put them in the tank or barrel as long as he usually does, so they're less oaky and just a lighter, fresher taste for the summer. But the Muscat Gialla, the label of it, is also our friend Johnny Jewell. And she was on a ride, and she looked over, and the horse's shadow was out on the grass. And so he's got long, long legs of the shadow and her sitting on top. And it's a golden color. The grass is a golden color to match the wine. So that's the Muscat Gialla.
So those are
our three horse labels.
I've got a question. So each of the labels is really based on an actual horse that you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, at the beginning of the grape making cycle, do you sometimes have in mind a horse or an experience with a horse that you go, ooh, that should be a wine? Or is it a case of the wine becomes produced and then you go, ooh, that reminds me of a horse? Which way does it go?
Wow, both.
Oh, really?
That's
interesting.
A great question. Both ways, yeah. Because the first one, the Muscat Canelli, I was riding Thief, and I always wanted a picture on the label of looking through the horse's ears. So I would look at different sites, different rides, different. A lot of people post that picture on Facebook, looking through the ears of the horse, you know, as their travels. So that one I specifically was looking for, what can I look through the ears that professes wine, which is the vineyard. How could that be better? So, and then the other is, I think the color. So the wine came before the label. So the color of the wine, when I saw the picture of Hank online, and he was running in the beautiful grass that was that time of the year, it's kind of a pinkish, the sun setting on it, and it's just a beautiful color. And that was the color of the wine. And then same thing with the Muscat Gialla, the grass was yellow. So maybe the colors, and then reminding of the wine. And so anyway, when we do Vino and Liberty, we'll definitely be thinking of the picture first, and then the wine will follow.
So is there a horse that we would know, maybe, you know, a famous horse of some sort, whether it's a famous horse that's around right now or a famous horse from history? Is there a famous horse that you would like to make a wine for? It's like, oh, let's make a wine to fit that horse's image or personality or legend.
I can't think of one. Yeah, put me on the spot. I can't think of one because I'm not really into racing that much. And I guess that's where you see the most famous horses on a racetrack. I think the trail horses that work so hard and maybe don't get the credit, those are the ones I would be after.
Sergeant Reckless could have a wine.
Oh, there you go.
What kind of wine would she be? I know nothing about wine. I'm a cheap drunk. So what kind of wine would Sergeant Reckless be?
Sergeant Reckless, a deep red.
Oh, yeah.
Deep red. Yeah.
Very
yeah,
strong.
Like a cab. Yeah. A cab. Sergeant Reckless. I love that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Okay, you guys are going to have to tell me who Sergeant Reckless is. Sorry.
Alice.
I don't know. I know, it's terrible. I feel like I should know, but I don't.
During the Korean War, Sergeant Reckless was actually a sergeant in the, I believe it's the Marines, but she was a local horse that was purchased by a artillery unit from a local horse breeder in Korea because they needed help getting artillery shells brought from whatever you call the storage area. Sorry, I'm showing my ignorance here. Up to the front to the actual guns. And it was extremely difficult work. They were very heavy shells. And the commander of the unit said, you know, we could put these on a horse. And he got some pushback, but he did it anyway. And he trained this horse. Then the horse would, they would load her up with X number of shells. It was like 6 or 8 or 10 shells because they were giant. And she would walk all by herself while the artillery was flying from where they'd load her up over the little hill and up to the guns and turn around and come back and get more shells all by herself.
Wow.
It's a pretty cool story. If you haven't read the story of Sergeant Reckless, you need to go there.
Yeah, no,
I didn't know
that
entire story. Yeah, so that's great. Yeah. I wonder if I would have to have someone's permission to use that.
But I doubt it.
What a great thing. I
could
have the American flag on one side and Sergeant Reckless on the other.
Yeah, it's a really cool story. So, tell us about Rin Tin Tin, because it's not enough to have heroes of horses, horse heroes on wine. She has dog heroes, too.
Yeah, so we, I was waiting for a workman one day, and our gates closed out front, and so I'm waiting for a truck to show up, and here comes a truck rattling down the road, and so I run out to the gate to let the person in, and the minute they see me, they zoom off, and here's this dog on limping on 3 legs that they had, I thought he had fallen out the truck. You know how people have dogs on the back of the truck. So anyway, I took him and put him in the barn, tried to nurse his leg. Very nice dog. He looked like a lab head and border collie body. So anyway, I took him and put him up, and I thought, you know, if he fell off, they're going to be back. So I waited and watched, and sure enough, they came back. And so I ran up there again, and they yelled something out the window, and they zoomed off. And so I said a very bad word. You, blah, blah, you dumped this dog. And so anyway, they dumped the dog. So turns out he's a very, very nice dog. And we took him in the house the first night, which is unheard of. We didn't know if he was potty trained. We didn't know if he would eat our old 15-year-old cat or anything. But we took him in the house the first night, and he was so calm and so happy to be with us that we called him Zen. And then we added Rin Tin Tin to it because Rin Tin Tin was such a hero dog. And so we call him Rin Tin Tin. And that's what our Zinfandel is called, Rin Tin Tin. And we put him in a direct. Yes. Yeah, we have him. Yeah.
I met him.
Very dog. Yeah, he's good. And so we put him in a director's chair like Rin Tin Tin, and he jumped out 50 times. So that picture didn't work. But we put him up on a little cliff and laid on the ground and took a picture of him like a Rin Tin Tin poster. And so that's the label.
Okay.
So Rin Tin Tin is our dog series. But then I jumped to the horse series because I just couldn't wait. So
that's cool. But yeah, there you go. Dogs, hero horses.
Hero dogs and hero another series. You might have to advance beyond wine, Becky.
Oh, you know, because Becky likes beer, so we have to start brewing beer.
There you go.
I'm on it. Yeah.
Well,
I'll send the first
wheel
to you in Florida.
Got the wheels turned. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Becky, for coming by the show today and telling us all about Vino the Mustang and how he came into your life. And the really creative and lovely ways that you guys come up with the beautiful horses on the labels of your wines. Where can folks find out more about Marker Sellers?
MarkerSellers.com is our website.
And Marker Sellers is spelled C-E-L-L-A-R-S.
Yes, right. So my husband's name is Mark, and so Marker is a playoff of Marker. Marker is a playoff of Mark. So MarkerCellars.com is our website.
Very good. Yeah. Well, thanks again, and we'll be checking. I'm sure we'll check again with you soon as you go down your road towards the Equine Legend series of wines from Marker Cellars.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed being with you again so much.
Well, I am anticipating more visits from Becky Rogers of Marker Cellars. What a fascinating and fun conversation.
Absolutely. When she starts competing with her new horse, we'll have to have some regular updates to
Absolutely.
Hear how he's doing.
They're going to have a red wine at some point in the future to represent the bruises from the first...
First bruises. That'll sell like Copperhead Red.
There we go. Well, we're going to take a little break now for our song, and then the NATRC monthly episode. We'll be right back, and we're going to have a chat with Lynn Ward.
Headwaters of the Snake, I am free, Lord, I am free. And I miss my home and family and the woman that I love. But the spirit of the Lapwai runs through the land like blood. And I'm leaving it behind me now, cause that's how it has to be. But I'll return and I'll be free. Lion and the blasted timber wolves, they run free, Lord, they run free. Canyon winds and rivers, clear and clean as polished gold, they run free, Lord, they run free. And the world keeps changing, spinning faster all the time. When a tired and troubled nation weighs heavy on my mind, I can leave it all behind me and be just who I want to be. And be free, Lord, to be free. Faster all the time. When a tired and troubled nation weighs heavy on my mind, I can leave it all behind me and be just who I wanna be. And be free, Lord, and be free. From Spotted Bear, Montana, to Nez Perce, Idaho, I am free, Lord, I am free. Turn me loose and set me running on Elk City Wagon Road, and I'll be free, Lord, I'll be free. When you see them crystal waters, you will never be the same. You can disappear and wander inland, never to be tamed. So leave your troubles far behind you. Come and ride along with me and be free, Lord, and be free, and be free, and be free.
And that was Ode to Selway by Bren Hill. You can find Bren Hill's music on his website, Bren with two N's, hill.com, or you can go on over to iTunes. Lots of great stuff over there. And it looks like we've got our next guest on the line, who, and it is Lynn Ward, and she's going to talk to us about riding around in Colorado, most beautiful place on earth, perhaps, and winner of the President's Cup for 2016.
Good morning, Lynn. It's so great to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you. Good morning to you, too.
So how's the weather been in Colorado this time of year?
Actually, we've had about 20 inches of snow in the last couple of weeks, but today was walk outside without a coat. It was gorgeous.
20 inches of snow? To me, that's crazy.
Yeah. We get our snows in the spring. This is the good time of year. This is when we start cheering about snow. This is what lets me have a pasture.
Oh, that makes sense, because all the moisture from the rain, because I guess you kind of have a drier climate in the summertime.
Yeah, we're considered high desert where we live.
Okay, which part of Colorado are you in exactly?
We're in a little town called Westcliff. We're about an hour straight west of Pueblo, Colorado, up in the San Cristo Mountains. We live at about 9,000 feet and look over these beautiful, from my window where I'm sitting right now, I can see 5 14ers, you know, covered in snow.
Wow. So you were our President's Cup winner in NATRC for 2016. And that is quite an accomplishment. Can you tell the people listening what it is that you have to do to become a President's Cup winner?
Well, you have to, they basically count the first 16 rides you start. So doing more than 16 doesn't really do you any good. But if you start a ride and say you have to pull for some reason, your horse is lame or you've got, you know, some sort of an issue, then that ride gets thrown out. You don't get to count that ride. So that is part of your 16. So it would really mess with your averages as well as your total points. So you have to do a lot of rides. You've got to cover a lot of territory. We had 9 rides in region, which is New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, actually clear up to Saskatchewan. But, it means you've got to go into other regions to get all of, to get enough rides accomplished too.
So you're in region 3. So can you tell me again what the states in there, because you said this, Saskatchewan, and I'm thinking, Saskatchewan, really?
Yeah, Alberta. We go all the way basically through that mountain region of North America. So it would be Colorado, New Mexico, Wyoming, Montana, and then all the way up into Canada. Though there's never been any rides up in the Canada area that I know of. But we've had some stuff that's been right on the Wyoming border. And then we also have Utah. I'm sorry, I forgot Utah.
Okay.
And we have a ride that encompasses, actually it's a ride that the camp is in Colorado, but the ride itself is right in Utah. It's right on the border. So.
Oh, okay. And is 9 rides for the region pretty normal, or do you usually have more or less?
That's relatively normal. I would say we run between 7 and 10. So it's probably on the high end of normal. And we were really fortunate this year that a lot of the region 6 rides, which is Kansas and Missouri, and then they go farther east, Nebraska, a lot of those rides were actually opposite weekends from ours. So, I didn't have a ride in region, I could go there versus them being the same weekend, which really makes it hard when they all run on the, concurrent weekends.
Right. We have the same problem sometimes with between region 4, with the Texas rides, we're always trying to get into region 6 as well. So we like to keep those, which unfortunately puts your rides and our rides on the same weekend if we're all playing the opposite.
And, some of them are on, they've been on that same second weekend forever, it's just, or historically it's always on Memorial Day, or historically it's always on Mother's Day, And so some of those things change. And then with Easter moving all over the map, that can also, change ride dates too.
Sure. That can play games with your plans. So what are some of the other places that you got to go? I guess what I'm wondering is, is there a type of terrain or weather that you guys prefer to do?
Well, avoiding the humidity rides is always a plus. We live in high desert, so we don't live in much humidity at all. So our horses aren't accustomed to it. They love getting down to lower elevation because, there's so much oxygen. I mean, they're just full of energy. In fact, they're really full of themselves when you get down low. But so if we're going to go into say, Kansas or Missouri or Nebraska. You always try to do those in the spring or even better in the fall when the humidities are lower.
That makes sense. And I know you guys came to Texas for one of our first rides of the spring last year in March. It was in Houston, which is high humidity. Did you guys have problems with the humidity then, or was the temperature?
You know, it was lovely. I mean, that was a lovely ride. That was a gated horse's dream.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, because it's flat and it's fast and it's like just go gate like mad. Loved it. It was actually it wasn't bad at all. You know, we did have to do a little shaving, of course, because obviously coming from 9,000 feet, we had a lot of winter coat. You know, we're still fully wintered out in March. Our guys are just now beginning to lose hair here mid-April. And for March ride, we definitely had to do some shaving. But this year, Cat Scamper was great. There was no rain. The weather was about 75. It was just beautiful. I mean, it was beautiful. We didn't really notice the humidity at all.
Well, that is fortunate, because I know last month, Susan Dent was at my competition from Alaska, and I know the humidity, and to us it was dry, but to her horse was kind of suffering with the heat and the humidity, which, you know, for Texas it was perfect, but for an Alaskan horse it was very warm.
Yeah. No, I think we got really lucky this year. I mean, we never hardly ever put a raincoat on this year. We didn't have a lot of rain rides. Had a lot of cold rides. I mean, half the pictures that are out there of Hooch and I'm bundled up with ear bands and sweatshirts pulled up over my helmet and the whole nine yards. So we had a lot of chilly rides early in the year. And even really fairly into June, we still had a lot of cold weather rides, which frankly for the horses is great. You know?
Sure.
So that was nice. I mean, the stars were in line. I mean, the rides were scheduled beautifully. The weather, we had great weather. We were able to avoid rides that, you know, have a history of becoming one-day rides because it does turn into, you know, quagmires of mud and things like that. And, you know, it's just, we had great logistics. I have said all along that I think there's three parts to the President's Cup. The first part is logistics. You know, how many miles are you pulling? Are you able to give them sufficient rest in between rides? You know, are you able, fortunately, we were able to take off work and leave on Wednesday or Thursday, so we were always in camp by Thursday and give the horses Friday off. We only had one back-to-back ride, you know, back-to-back weekends, and that was early in the year before they were tired. In the middle of the summer, we had three full weeks off. Then
Wow.
We just turned them out in pasture and said, go be horses, you know. And they were able to rest. We were able to rest. We had great logistics, and it worked. I mean, my plan A really worked, and everybody kept telling me plan A wasn't going to work, but we were very fortunate. Plan A worked all year.
Well, you didn't have to pull, and nothing, you know, nothing went wrong. So Hooch was able to do the whole season without you having to have a contingency or deal with only having 15 rides versus 16. So
yeah, or the worst yet, having 15 and a half rides. You know, having a ride turn into a B. That really, you know, then you got to go find another B ride or something to do. So I think the stars were in alignment. We were very, very fortunate to do it. You know, I say a third is logistic, a third is who else is running for the President's Cup, what are their logistics, and the third of it is just flat luck.
Sure.
You know, did you throw a shoe at the wrong time? Did your horse, my husband's horse, the very last ride of the season, 3 miles from camp on Sunday, stepped on this little log and his foot rolled and he dropped off into about an 18-inch deep rut and he pulled a groin muscle.
Mm.
And we were barely able to walk him into camp. Jim had to pull, I mean, he never even checked him out. He was totally lame. And, you know, and that's just a luck thing. I mean, had something happened like that early in the season, you know, it would have completely changed the landscape. So, you know, the stars were in alignment. We had a lot of good luck, and I have a great horse.
Well, so tell us about Hooch. What's his real name, and, like, what type of horse is he, that kind of thing?
He's a Kentucky Mountain horse. I bought him in Kentucky, actually. I actually bought him directly from the breeder. He'd been his daughter's horse. When I bought him, he had been a teenager's horse. He was a little spoiled. But he had done some drill team. He had done some trail stuff. pretty much knew how to neck rein. He didn't work off legs super well, but he did know how to sight. He had a good, real strong basic training. He was a 7-year-old when I found him. And, you know, I was looking for something. Every horse I've ever had, I have started from a halter break. And I was tired. I just said after my last one, he was quite the challenge. I just said, I'm not doing it again. I'm buying training. And I kept telling Jim, be prepared. Training costs more than breeding. I said, I'm buying training. And I just got really lucky to find him. He was kind of the, you know, the friend of the friend of the word of the mouth. And this guy trained for somebody I knew and, you know, type thing. And he's a pretty boy. And he's 14'3" with his shoes on and if they're brand new. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of got really high withers, so he actually mounts like a smaller than 14'3" horse, even that. And, you know, so he's a lovely size. He's a going machine. I mean, just his idea of, we spent the first 3 years with me just going, please just let me have some breaks. He is one going, blowing machine. He loves to go fast. He's very competitive. He wants to be out front. He wants to be in front of everybody. He wants to go like the wind. There's just no slowdown in him. And it took up until really the year before, you know, until 15, I kept threatening to sell him because he was just such a handful.
Right. I can understand. I've just started riding a gated horse myself. It's my first gated horse since my first horse. Mm-hmm. And he's older than Hooch, but I'm finding the same problem. It's like he's real mellow before we start. And then as soon as everyone starts going, he just wants to pass everybody and keep going. And, you know, he'll get to something scary and a little technical and he'll slow down and pay attention, but then he goes right back to being fast.
Yeah. And woohoo, let's go. Well, and, you know, and the thing I've always loved about him, that probably kept me from selling him 3 years ago, was that even though, like I say, brakes were always kind of an option we didn't always have, the minute we'd come up to an obstacle, he would just go, oh, this looks fun. What do you want me to do? He was always quite curious about them and very willing to stop and listen to me about them. And that was the one thing that, you know, kept me keep hanging on there till we finally got to the stage where he went, well, yeah, you know, I'm like 10 now. Maybe I could get some breaks.
Right. I know that that's the breaks, you know, joking about breaks being optional, but they really aren't.
Yeah, they really shouldn't be.
They really shouldn't
be. Let's put it that way. They really shouldn't be.
So what are some things about him that make you laugh? I mean, I'm sure he must have a ton of personality if you've spent this much time together.
His registered name is Turner's Wild Card. And they actually called him Wild Card. And I went, oh, my God, never name them something you don't want them to be. I mean, that's a terrible idea. My goddaughter had one named Crash, and he just kept putting her on the ground. You know, it's like, good grief, never name them something you don't want them to be. So the first thing I did is I said, his name has to change. And I took my very first test drive. We had flown in. We didn't take a trailer, you know, never pull into looking for a horse with a trailer behind you. We had flown into Kentucky, and I had about 18 horses on a list to look at that I'd seen video of, about a 1,000-mile loop we were going to drive in a week. And when we got there, it was – our plane landed early, our rental car we got early. I mean, we were running ahead of schedule. So I wasn't supposed to see him until the next morning. I had called Tim Little, and I said, can I come tonight? And so we got there, all duskish time, you know, very late afternoon. It was December, too, so not long days. And so I always do groundwork. I don't care that they don't know stuff. I just want one that says, what do you want me to do? And isn't standing there with his ears pinned and swishing his tail going, I don't know which one. I don't want to play.
Right.
You know, I want one that goes, what? Tell me again. And so I'd done a bunch of groundwork with him, and I was really liking what I was seeing about him and in talking to him. And, of course, I love, you know, being able to buy him from the breeder because, you know, you always wish most horses came with a resume, and it was nice to really have one with him. And so it's dark now, and I said, well, I want to come back tomorrow and ride him. And it was full moon night. And he says, well, why don't you go take a ride? It's full moon. He says, stay up here on the meadow up above, and, you know, don't go in the trees, and you should be fine. And I had actually flown out with my endurance saddle, and I thought, well, okay, you know, I wanted to put my saddle on. And so I saddled him up, and Tim is visiting with my husband, and I'm waiting for him to, you know, go get another horse to saddle up. I'm assuming he's going to go with me. And he isn't doing that. And I finally get ready. He hands me a bridle because I hadn't, obviously, I wanted to use whatever bit he'd been using. And I said, are you coming? He said, no, you'll be fine. And I'm thinking, really? Okay. And so I lead him over to this little bridge. There was a little creek and there was a little bridge. I led him over to this little bridge to use as a mounting block. And as I go to swing my leg up, he says, nobody's really been on him in about 6 months. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm completely crazy. I am getting on a horse I don't know in the dark by myself. I'm not a well person. This is nuts. He said, oh, you'll be fine. And so we just kind of went around the barn and then we went clear out in the pasture. And, you know, I probably took him half a mile from the house and he was just great. And I'm thinking, well, this is a good sign. So when I got him home, you know, I spent several weeks trying to come up with a name and I talked about Moon and Shiner. And, you know, since he came from Kentucky, I went, stood in a major liquor store and looked at all the different names of bourbon, you know, Kentucky bourbon, thinking maybe something would pop out at me. And finally, I just said, Kentucky Moonshine, what is it? It's Hooch.
There you go.
And by that time, I've had him probably a month or 6 weeks, and he loves to be loved. He wants to come up and be petted, but he's kind of a goofball, and, you know, he's really a character. And I thought, you know, Hooch really does fit him. I mean, it's a good name for him.
Well, yeah, I think sometimes the name makes the horse. I mean, like, sometimes the horse already has the name, and then other times, mm-hmm. I mean, like, because my pasture, I've got Liberty, and it suits him. It's just who he is. You know, he's mm-hmm. full of freedom. And he was born on the day after 9/11, so that's why he got named that. And then, like, the horse, my gated horse is Joe Bob, and the vet judge asked me recently, how would you describe him if you had to describe him in a word? And I said, Joe Bob. So it's like, I've since decided like Gomer or Goober, but Joe Bob.
Well, and we always jokingly, you know, we jokingly say, you know, we got our redneck horses, you know, we got our Kentucky redneck horses because my husband bought, we ended up buying two because we found another one that we loved. And my husband was going to take a Missouri Fox Trotter that I had been riding for quite a while that had grown from this 15-hand horse when I bought him to a 16-3.
Wow.
I had to climb on a mounting block to put a saddle on him.
And Jim was going to ride him?
Yeah, Jim was going to ride him.
You should explain that Jim is a small man.
Yeah, he's not a big guy either, you know. But he was going to take him. And then when we found his boy, his boy was actually called Rocky, which his other horse that he'd had for since he'd bought as a 3-year-old and rode till he was 19 was Rocky. And it's like, well, we have to change his name too. So when we bought Suede too, it's like, you know, Jim got on him and I said, I rode him first. And I said, you need to ride this horse. He is a glide ride dream buddy. And he's just real comfortable in his own skin and, you know, it's not going to scare you. I think you're going to really like him. So we ended up buying two.
From the same breeder or from different people?
No, completely different parts of the state.
Okay.
He was on my list of 18 that I went to look at. And he was actually the last horse I looked at. And Hooch was, I guess, the second horse. The first horse we looked at, I don't know, from the video, they must have starved him to death. I said, well, at least you can see confirmation because you can see every bone in his body.
Aww.
And he was so thin, and you couldn't even lead him. He just dived into the grass, and I was like, no, I'm not going here.
Right.
I may be calling the Humane Society on you, but I'm not going here. And so basically the first horse I seriously looked at was Hooch, and the last horse we looked at was Suede, which is what Jim bought.
So they're both Kentucky Mountain horses. I guess
Jim rides a Tennessee Walker.
Oh, he's a Tennessee Walker.
A Tennessee Walker.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between a Tennessee Walker and a Kentucky Mountain horse?
Not much, really. They both gait exactly the same. It's a 4-beat lateral. So it's, you know, they do right front, left rear, you know, it's like, it looks like a pace.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's not like the Missouri Fox Trotter where it's more like that mashed potatoes. Gait.
Right. Okay.
It's a perfectly even 4-beat lateral gait. And so the boys gait exactly like, I think somewhere somebody along the line got annoyed with, you know, another breed association and started the Rocky Mountains, the Mountain Pleasures, the Tennessee Walkers, the Kentucky Mountains, all basically run back to the same foundation stallions.
Okay. Well, I didn't know for sure. I just knew that, and then I know there's offshoots of those, like people have bred Peruvian Pasos to Tennessee Walkers, and I have a friend that has one that we're pretty sure that that's what he is, but he's registered as a Kentucky Mountain, or he was one of the registries where you can, like, do a video.
Well, there's spotted mountain horses.
Right.
There's all kinds of stuff out there, and they're all basically the same foundation type horses. You're looking at that 4-beat lateral, which is a much easier gait, I think, to keep and maintain compared to a Missouri Fox Trotter.
Well, and the one thing I've wondered about, just because it's been so long since I've had my own Tennessee Walker, the one I had came with a nice flat walk. He did a running walk, but I didn't know what I was doing, and I ended up teaching him. I ended up racking him. And all the thing I remember being different is one, they shake their head, and one, their head is higher and doesn't shake as much, is what the guys told me at the time. And I don't know. As long as it's smooth and I'm not bouncing, I'm happy.
That pretty much works for me, too. I mean, you know, you want as long as it's a smooth gait and they can do it pretty effortlessly.
Right.
You know, that's the issue, is to retain a gait that they can do for long periods of time without, you know, running out of wind, number one, but also, you know, just really wearing themselves out. And my guy has a beautiful, just slow walk, just a conventional walk on a horse. He also has a big flat walk, which his head is just to kind, you know, it's just to going up and down, and he's just flying.
Right.
GPS will read about between five and six miles an hour at his flat walk. I have trouble cueing that one, you know, but
getting
on some good flat terrain and, you know, heading toward home, and he's like, we can do this for hours. And then he's got what we would consider his 4-beat lateral gait. And then within that, there's varying, I define them as gears, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. I mean, he can do it from very slow to up to almost 12 miles an hour.
Wow, that's awesome. You see, my horse has a nice canter, too. And
yeah, oh, he does. Rockin' horse canter.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And I know a lot
I
of...
I try not...
Oh, so you, do,
ahead,
you, 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 no, do you use this canter very often, or do you avoid it?
I try to avoid it. I do a little bit, mainly because it helps me relieve muscle tiredness, and I think it helps him to relieve some muscle tiredness, just to do something different with his body for the short term. If you canter them a lot, then you can have a little bit of trouble with your gait.
Yes.
You have to be cautious about that.
Well, because
you know,
they like the canter. Then they want to canter.
I mean, they run madly in the pasture. I mean, they canter and gallop through the pasture. But if you really, you know, do a lot of long cantering, then I will find myself in having to really slow down and collect in the gait. I have to work on the gait a little bit, you know, for a while, and then it'll settle back into more of a natural happening.
I also have
a running walk, too. Yeah, I also have a running walk.
Oh, nice. How fast does the running walk usually go?
Running walk, I'm trying to think about GPS, just running walk. It can boogie. I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing because he's like gating and cantering like kind of all at the same time. It's very smooth, and it's pretty doggone fast. I mean, if I need to catch up or you've got a good place where you want to really boogie and get ahead, that's the gait I ask for.
Yeah, that's what my husband's horse does that a lot. His Sherman is he has that gait, and it's almost like, you know, he kind of has a little hop in there sometimes, but – you know, he does all those different things, but my horse will trot when he gets tired, which I let him do for a very short stretch of time just to stretch his back, and then he'll go right back in his gait. Whereas Sherman, I don't think Sherman even knows how to trot. I mean, I've seen him trot in pasture.
Doesn't trot at all.
Yeah, he doesn't trot under saddle.
I've never even seen mine trot in pasture. No, he's either gating or cantering.
Cool.
I've never even seen him trot in pasture. I'd love to teach him trot a lot, you know, because they look lame as hell, unfortunately, on the line. Lunch line when they're doing their pacey thing, you know, their 4-beat lateral. And it's hard. I do some Western dressage with him, and that 10-meter circle is a really hard circle for a gated horse. So they tend to want to flop into a pace. And so he tends to sometimes pace on the lunch line because, again, basically you're looking at an average 10-meter circle there.
So in Western dressage, you can use a curb bit. But, like, I know in gated dressage, they want them to ride them in a snaffle, just like you would a regular dressage horse. Have you ever looked at any of the gated dressage work?
You know, I play a little bit with a trainer that comes around here occasionally. I use it more for the lateral work and
right.
that sort of thing. I think you have to find the bit that's right for your horse. But a gaited horse, then Jim rides in a Snaffle,
mm-hmm.
and his horse gates beautifully. But I found when I tried to put Hooch in a Snaffle that he couldn't get balanced on it. He needed mm-hmm. a little bit more of a curb, a little bit solider bit in his mouth in order to get his head bob going. And the bit I've got, it has a little, I don't know what I want to call it. It slides a little. So you hear it
mm-hmm.
and his head is bobbing. And he gets that, you know, it helps him with the rhythm. I found when I tried to do a Snaffle with him and I tried Kimberly with some different other things, I had a little more trouble with the gait. I think you've got to find the bit that works with them. He came with this god awful, pretty strong shank and real long shanks. In fact, he couldn't get his head in the water bucket on the trail.
Oh, wow.
Because the shank was so long and I'd have to jump off and take his bit out every time. And I said, this has got to change. You know, I don't have the time riding open to jump off and take a bit out of his mouth every time we're going to stop and stick our head in the water bucket.
Right, that makes sense. I know Joe Bob was ridden in a Wonder Bit, and he's also been ridden in at one of the Imus bits. And
mm-hmm.
there's like another curb bit that his original trainer showed me. But I'm trying to see if he can go in a Snaffle because when he pulls on me, I feel like the curb chain just makes it that we get to pulling on each other, and maybe he might be more relaxed in something different. But
mm-hmm.
it's all experimentation.
It is experience. You know, it's like you got to find the shoes that fit your feet.
Exactly. Well,
are just that way. You know, you got to find the right one for that individual horse.
Well, say before we go, I want you to tell us about your ride that you and Jim are managing this summer, because I know I want to try to come if I can, and it sounds delightful.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's right here in our valley. It's going to be down on the valley floor, so we will have some nice grass. There's a creek that runs through the whole thing, so we'll have live fresh water, you know, a fair amount of water to cross and have. You'll look up and see the Santa Cristos run 108 miles, so you obviously can't see from Santa Fe clear up to Salida, but you will look at the major part of the Santa Cristos. You know, probably there's 15, 14ers there. When you look behind you, you've got the Wet Mountains, which are these wonderful, rolling, rugged little hills that have deep, wonderful valleys. In fact, it's actually more rugged on this side. But it's going to be absolutely gorgeous. It's on a private ranch, so we don't have to worry about weed-free hay. She raises world-famous grass-fed beef. In fact, she's catering our Saturday supper for us with her world-famous grass-fed beef.
My mouth is watering.
It's going to be wonderful. And then we're providing, I think, lunch and dinner for all your meals, everything but breakfast. We're cooking for you all the time.
Wow.
Camping should be nice. We should have a nice kind of variety of trails. It's going to be rolling hills, and it should be a relatively actually easy ride other than it's sitting at about 8,000 feet on the valley floor.
So if you're someone like me who lives, you know, 200 feet below sea level, I mean, not really, but how soon should someone come to get acclimated, or should you come in and do your ride and go right back before you start to have problems?
Come in and do your ride.
Okay.
Horses, interestingly enough, horses do really well the first week, 10 days, and then they kind of start to fall apart.
Okay.
So I say if you're going to stay a week, and we have a lot of people that will stay, that will come from out of state and will stay because it's so beautiful here. I mean, there's all kinds of trailheads. You can stay at the ranch for minimal charge. There's all kinds of trailheads in the Forest Service you can go to, you know, from the ride that are really just right here, and a lot of people will stay over. So what you want to do is come in, you know, get in on Thursday or Friday morning or whatever, ride the ride, and then stay over.
Yeah, okay.
And spend your week afterwards. By the time you're ready to leave at the end of the next weekend, your horses are still doing great, and you're out of here before they begin to have some issues. Now, there's less air. I mean, let's
right.
be real honest. There's less air, but there's also less humidity. So
what about people? I mean, like, I went to Island in the Sky ride, and that was hard for me. I'm asthmatic, and, I mean, I survived it just fine, but, you know, except for getting lost and having to pull and, you know, all that.
Well, Island is at 10,000 feet.
Okay.
I mean, Island is between camp is at 10,000 feet, and then you go up to 11. This is only going to be around 75 to
80.
It'll
be fine.
Much easier.
Yeah.
Mountain time and Island time are the same time zones.
Okay.
You know, Island time because of the humidity and the heat. Island time, there's just no dang air here.
Right.
So, you know, you just don't, you're just not going to run around and do things like a ball of, you know, like a house fire.
Right.
You just kind of take your time and you'll be fine.
So when is it?
It is the third weekend in August, I believe, without a calendar in front of me. That's okay. 17th, 18th, 19th, right in there.
Awesome. Nobody wants to be in Texas then anyway.
Oh, heck no.
It's a perfect time to be in Colorado.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll be beautiful. We'll probably, the nights will be in the 50s, 60s. Mm. You'll want to blanket your horses. The days will be running in the 70s, low 80s.
I'm sold.
You know, it should be gorgeous. Our monsoon season's July, so the rain should be over. We shouldn't, you know, maybe a 4 o'clock shower for 10 minutes, but, you know, beyond that, we shouldn't have rain. And like I said, even by August, we probably won't have any rain. Should be beautiful.
Is it barefoot friendly? Or is it rocky?
Well, this is the Rocky Mountains.
Well, yeah, you got a point there.
I got a point. I think it's going to be fairly reasonable.
Okay.
We're just now getting the snow off the ground enough to truly go find our trail. They've had several hundred-mile endurance rides here on the ranch. The trails are fairly set in what we're going to do. I don't know that I wouldn't ride it without front boots, at least.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think you need to be padded up or anything.
Sounds perfect. And is it up ready to register for yet, or is it up?
Yeah, we're open.
Okay,
yeah,
so if open. People want to register, they need to go to rms.natrc.net. And if they have any questions, there's people that can help them with that, or they can text.
Absolutely.
They can text you or me. We'll include your info in the show notes. And if anybody mm-hmm. has, because RMS is unfortunately not always easy.
Once you get set up,
right.
It's great. It's just that initial setup.
Right.
Well, I've already walked two brand new riders through it this year. You know,
fantastic.
It's like, okay, we're on the same page. See that drop down window, you know, and got them all set up. And
yeah, and we can help you with that. Anyone that's done a ride before or is computer familiar can help a new rider get registered.
Oh, absolutely. And if they're computer literate, it's really, you just got to take your time and read what it says.
Exactly. So, and one more thing I want to do is talk about how fabulous the jewelry you make is.
Oh, thank you.
So tell people how they can find your jewelry, because, you know, I would have more of it, but, you know, it's kind of my treat to myself every year when I see you at conventions. So.
Oh, it's a lot of fun to do. It really allows, you know, I was an art major in college. Was an art major in college before I went to beauty school to become a hairdresser. And so it really gives me that really super creative outlet of design and balance and that sort of thing. And our website, I'll be quite honest, isn't the greatest in the world, but it's www.rockin.com. And it's rockinldesigns.com. And the reason the website isn't the greatest in the world is I have a partner in the jewelry. We only make one of a kind.
Mm.
So if I've made one of these gorgeous lapis necklaces, I put it, you know, it takes a half hour, 45 minutes to get it all photographed, then you got to go get it uploaded and set up, and then you sell it the next day, and then you have to take it all back off.
Right.
And so everything is very unique. It's totally one of a kind. We're in several places here in Colorado, but that probably doesn't help your Texas and other, you know, listeners either. But I do go to convention every year, and
that's beautiful.
Next year's national convention is in Albuquerque.
Yes.
It's here in our region. It's going to be great fun. We've got tours of Old Town Albuquerque, and we've got some good vendors already signed up. And so remember that National Convention is right here in the heart of the Rocky Mountains, too.
There you go. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. And I will catch up with you soon at a ride.
It was great to get to talk to Lynn. As soon as we were done talking, I went on to our rms.natrc.net website and entered her ride, which will take place in August, the one she talked about.
Look at you.
And I know. It's like my husband and I had so much fun in Colorado last year, we decided we should go back and maybe we'll do what she suggested and hang out for a few days after the ride and just do touristy Colorado-y thing.
Colorado is a lovely place to do the tourist thing.
So, and if anybody wants to know about the dates of Lynn's ride or any other upcoming rides for the rest of our year, they can go to natrc.org, and there's a tab that says events, or it might say rides, not looking at it right now, and they can click on it, and it will give them a map of the entire United States, and they can look at rides for every region and every state.
There you go. The NATRC website is simple, but really easy to use and very, very thorough. What you need is there, and it's really not that hard to find. Well, you can find links to today's guests in our show notes page at horsesinthemorning.com, and you can find us on Facebook. If you haven't been following along, you should be. Just go to Facebook and search for Horses in the Morning. And you can follow us on Twitter as well. Our handle is Horse Radio. And if you don't want to miss an episode of any of your favorite Horse Radio Network shows, you should be downloading our free app. You can get it for your iPhone or your Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. It's a free app. Or if you're old school, you can subscribe via iTunes. Think of that. That's old school nowadays.
That's right.
And we want to say a big thank you to the NATRC and Marker Sellers for making this show possible. And you know something? We'll see you again next month, Alice.
All right. Sounds like a plan.
Woohoo! That's a wrap.